Adelaide Pallet member Diane Matson is a food writer who's just interviewed Israeli-British chef Yotam Ottolenghi, and she introduces part one of some recordings she made of him at the Ubud Writers Festival recently in Bali. Yotam enthralled the hundreds of attendees, including Diane.
Thanks, Graham. I've had some great food interviews in my career, but most recently, like many food lovers, I am a fan of Yotam Ottolenghi, the Israeli-British chef who's charming the world with his fusion of cuisines and the way he heroes vegetables, drawing on the experiences with deep roots in the Middle East, but then writing books that he describes as international. Through his 7 books, with another one on the way, and his SBS food series, he has been instrumental in putting many exotic ingredients into the larders of keen home cooks. I was lucky enough to get an exclusive interview with Yotam ahead of the annual Ubud Writers Fest in Bali at the end of October, but then I went to hear him and meet him at several of the festival events and experience the difference in the way he speaks when at ease with an audience as opposed to talking with a journo like me who's digging into his life. With me, he was charming, eloquent, generous with his thoughts and time. That's just the way he is, but then I felt compelled to record him because with many people around him at the festival, the many people were so interested in his unique food, his stories just changed and truly shone. So my interview, which will appear this Saturday in the SA Weekend magazine lift out of the Advertiser in Adelaide, is rather a fusion as well. It's a mix of that interview as well as many of the chats we heard and had with Yotam Ottolenghi in Bali, where, by the way, he was really enamoured with the cuisine and the street food and the whole food scene, which is a burgeoning aspect of Bali. He was brilliantly led by a mediator, Sydney journalist Joanna Saville, who was kindly happy for these sessions to be shared with us on radio. We're going to play for you 2 parts of the candid conversations he had at the Writers' Fest with the visitors, who, by the way, numbered in the hundreds and were mostly from Australia, with New Zealanders as well, but it's quite amazing to see the influx of Australians into Bali for that particular last week of October, for all the writers who were there, but this year particularly for the food aspect, which was all focused around Yotam Ottolenghi. We're going to hear him now, where he talks about Jerusalem and how at first it was a place where he felt he was always looking back and he couldn't wait to leave. But then later he was spurred to write about it and its culture through the food and through the way he would eat and experience the produce of the area, and that's all at the heart of the history and of his story in the book, which he calls Jerusalem.
Where do I start to describe Jerusalem? Because it's such a rich place, and there's so many layers, historical, cultural, that it's very difficult to know where to start. But I look out there and I see a bougainvillea. We have a lot of bougainvilleas, not in Jerusalem, but especially when you kind of go a little bit down the hill towards Jericho and towards the coast near Tel Aviv. And it's a kind of it's an incredible place in so many senses, because as I said, there is this kind of intense sense of history. It's a bit like when you go to places somewhere like Istanbul, where you can actually just smell history. Jerusalem has that on you. You look around and you can sense this, you can feel it with a kind of the texture of the stone in different places, the smells of ingredients, with the Muslim call to prayer, you know, with the flavors that you taste when you go to have like a platter of Middle Eastern meze. Everything is kind of, it's extremely sensual and evocative, and I'm not surprised that people get a Jerusalem syndrome, which is a well-documented psychiatric phenomenon where people who have been thinking of Jerusalem all their lives go into complete meltdown when they arrive in Jerusalem. It has that effect on people. It's true. Not a lot of cities. Stockholm is one. Jerusalem is another one. Has a syndrome. They have. I don't know if you want that or not. We also have Jerusalem artichoke, which I guess is better. But that is really kind of, it's seriously intense. And when I was growing up in Jerusalem, it was also, so I'm a child of the late 60s, and I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. And Jerusalem was a much more positive place, unfortunately, than it is now. It was just after the 1967 war, and the reality of the occupation and the interaction between Jews and Palestinians has not hit anyone as hard as it did earlier. So there was a kind of a naivety, you know, that you could actually go between the sides and feel like you are in a place that has some kind of normality to it. Nothing was normal, really, but there was a kind of a sense of normality and ease. So I remember, as a family, we used to go and eat a lot in East Jerusalem, or in Bethlehem, or in Jericho, or in Nablus, all these places in the West Bank, which are now blocked off. And it was a really, it was a super exciting experience. It was a bit exotic, but not totally. It was familiar and unfamiliar at the same time. And at home, my parents are both of European descent. My dad is from a Jewish Italian family, my mom from a German Jewish family. So we've always had European food. So this was the kind of food that I grew up with. But around, there was all these incredible Middle Eastern flavors that I still love and cherish and kind of choose to cook with today. And anyone who's opened an Ottolenghi cookbook has experienced those flavors. They are extremely good, and so I think I'm very lucky because I've had all these influences and all these experiences in my life.
And of course, you write about your German grandmother's cauliflower and your Italian grandmother's gnocchi alla romana. I'm curious, actually, I've never asked you this question. How did those two families end up in Jerusalem?
For that, we'll need another session.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very short version.
Yeah, both my parents arrived just before the Second World War with their respective families as children, living with families that had both the means and the foresight to leave Europe just before the war started. So they were both born in Europe but arrived in 1939, the year the war started, so safe that way. And obviously, years later they met, but so they just got there in the nick of time.
Yeah, gosh, thank goodness they did, for every single reason. You say also that Jerusalem defines you, but how much does being Jewish or Israeli define you?
It's a really, really complicated question because I think I haven't lived in Israel for over 20 years, and so I started my journey in my late 20s, and I moved to Amsterdam and lived the life for a couple of years there, and then I moved to London and lived there ever since. And I think in the back of my mind, I was always from Israel. I mean, my first language is Hebrew, and and my family lives there. I've got so many friends. But I've kind of become this kind of, I know a lot of people like that, I'm sure also in the audience, someone who's a bit stateless, and I find that very liberating. It's a great place to be, so you can choose what you want to be whenever in a way that is suits you. And I feel that that has really empowered me. So I am Israeli in many senses. Now I feel I'm also British in many senses because I have been there for that long. And when I go to Israel, I get really annoyed with the way people behave. And they say to me, like, you've lived there for too long. You don't understand us anymore, because I don't see how I become really impatient with impatience. And so I feel like I can do all of those things. But deep down inside, I guess, the place that you've lived through in the first, you know, 10 or 20 years of your life makes you. So I guess that makes me a son of that place, Israel.
Absolutely. And as you say, that joy and delight that you found as a child in the Middle Eastern flavors that have so defined the way that you write your recipes.
Just one point, which is really interesting. So I started my business with a few partners in 2002, and we served this kind of combination of things that some of you might recognize as Ottolenghi food, but it hasn't been really identified as Middle Eastern or Israeli or Palestinian. for quite a while because it was anything really. I mean, yogurt is not necessarily belongs to that part of the world, or neither chili or coriander, or you know, we're here, so obviously it doesn't belong there, or shallot or onion, etc. But people started identifying myself and Sami Tamimi, who is one of my business partners, and he's Palestinian, as Israeli and Palestinian only after Jerusalem, the book, came out. Before that, we were just like two people living in London cooking delicious, mostly food. And after that, there's kind of the label, the penny has dropped, and then that has been that. But I wouldn't say our food is particularly outside this cookbook, which was all about a journey into our past and into kind of understanding what where we came from before that. It's pretty international.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think those are the things that probably stood out for a lot of people. I mean, all the jokes about, you know, no one having pomegranate molasses in their cupboards and everyone having to run out and find za'atar for the first time. And now we all have those in our larders. So, Sami, I just wanted to ask you quickly about Sami because, you know, you escaped a PhD in philosophy and all sorts of things and found yourself in grey old rainy London after beautiful, vibrant Jerusalem and ended up doing a cookery course, which you say brought out, you know, the creativity that you had inside you that wasn't really attached to the PhD, potential PhD in philosophy. And you met Sami as a baker at a Baker and Spice, which was a London, very famous London bakery. And you had so much in common, obviously. You're born in the same year, you're born in the same town, you're both gay, and you're both living in London. And what was the bond, food, or was it the Jerusalem heritage, or was it all of that, do you think? Because he's been very central to your food journey.
Yeah, I think, so it was... As you pointed out, Sami and I, our friendship has really started in a way that many friendships do, which is based on what we have in common. So, yeah, we worked together. Sami was the chef, the head chef of Baker & Spice, and I was the head pastry chef. And we worked in the same place, though not side by side, because physically in different spaces. And we just found that... we love spending time in each other's company. We used to go after work to Hyde Park, which was just around the corner, and spend time in Soho and go to the cinema and do things that, you know, just evolve. And it wasn't really around food. I mean, food was always very central because we work around food, we love eating, but it was about many things that we had in common, and we still do. The idea to do a book about Jerusalem actually didn't appeal to us at the beginning. I think Jerusalem, with all its beauty and history, is could be quite cumbersome as a heritage for someone who grew up there, because Jerusalem is where you live if you want to look backwards, and Tel Aviv or in other cities in the world you look forward. And I think many people who grew up in Jerusalem feel that burden. It's quite traditional. It's not a very rich city. It's quite poor. It's very spiritual and very, as I said, religious. And we were not interested in those things. We couldn't wait to escape. And I think the journey that took us back to Jerusalem to write the book was a journey that I think many people that left their hometown often do in life. When you reach a certain age, you look back and you say, okay, let bygones be bygones. I want to see where I came from. And this is really, so Noam, one of our other business partners, said to us, look, you guys have to write a Jerusalem cookbook for people to understand where your food started. And Sami and I were saying, like, no, let's forget about it. We already cook Italian food. Why should we go back and cook Palestinian and Israeli food? But we sat down for a couple of hours and we just started reminiscing and talking about little alleyways in Jerusalem where we used to go and buy food and where you used to stop for your falafel, where you stop for your nuts and seeds and all those kind of things that you have. And even just kind of taking this virtual walk through Jerusalem immediately meant that, okay, within an hour we knew we wanted to write this book. There was no question about it. We just started coming up with recipes and with ideas. I took on myself to write the narrative, and Sami was more active with the recipes, and then it all came together when we were testing them, and we had these wonderful Friday night dinners in which we tested the dishes on our friends and families and then took notes, and whoever was there was kind of shocked by the level of details we went to when we wanted to perfect our recipes, because we're both terrible perfectionists, and a recipe, I find it really hard to say goodbye to a recipe and without trying to fix it and improve it even more, and it's not a good thing. But it just, it does make for good recipes at the very end, but the process can be quite painful.
That was Diane Matson's recording of Yotam Ottolenghi at the Ubud Writers' Festival in Bali. Now, we're going to have part two of that next week, and he talks about London, about his collaborations with various people, quite an interesting mix of other chefs, and he also talks about his new book, which is not out yet. His books are published in Australia by Penguin, and his website is Ottolenghi, it's ottolenghi.co.uk. You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.